Let's talk about Inauguration Day a little bit. What was the day like for you in terms of access and all the other things you had to navigate being in Washington for only a short time?
Well, you know, obviously we all noticed that it was inside, and that was needed. You know, whether it was security or weather related, it was a change that was somewhat unexpected. But you know, lots of people were still in Washington. There were lots of folks from my district in North Carolina, which was wonderful. Whether it was dinners, lunches, coffees, there was just a full slate of activities with people really from all over the country. I mean, Washington was really saturated with folks that came for the inauguration, even after it was moved inside. So that was a real highlight. And then the day of the inauguration, you know, all of the members of Congress had to go to the House floor, where we stayed for about 30, 40 minutes, and we were just ushered into the rotunda. And it was a surreal experience. You know, obviously there were people from all over the world and obviously all over the United States in the rotunda. And being a new member of Congress, we were on the very back row, but we could still see just about everything. And, you know, watching the former president file in, the Joe Biden and Kamala Harris file in, and then the Trump family came in. It was just a surreal experience, Chris. It really was.
You mentioned the ceremony being moved inside because of the temperatures and security. Obviously, it didn't really damper the day. It didn't seem watching it on television. I'm always struck by the pomp and circumstance of Inauguration Day, as well as the peaceful transfer of power in our country, something that maybe we shouldn't take for granted because it doesn't happen in every country across the world.
Absolutely. You know, there were some foreign leaders that were present, and I actually got to meet the president of Argentina. And you know, had a brief conversation with him, and he just said that America is truly a light for the world in terms of how the government does transfer power peacefully, and how virtuous the system seems to be from afar. And to see other people come to our capital and see it, who are from other parts of the world and other governments, it was really something special.
Congressman, I want to change gears on you. Talk about some of the order of the day in terms of the executive orders. And first, the pardons. There were a lot of pardons issued by both outgoing President Biden, some preemptive pardons there. And then, of course, President Trump with those involved for the January 6th incident on the Capitol. Curious your perspective on the use of pardons and how widespread it's become, both at the federal and state levels of our government.
Sure. I, you know, as a former prosecutor, Chris, I'm skeptical to endorse the full range of pardons. We all saw that President Biden issued preemptive pardons, which is a pretty unfortunate look. But the ones that I had a greater issue with was he issued 2,500 pardons or commutations for individuals who had been convicted or pled guilty to various crimes. Some of those folks I prosecuted, and I knew them well and knew them not to be, as he described, quote, nonviolent. And, you know, that was pretty upsetting to me. But in terms of the January 6th pardon, you know, I may have gone about it a different way, but in his to his credit, President Trump was very clear about it. He noted his intentions in that regard on the campaign trail, and he did exactly what he said he was going to do. And you know, that was just one of many of the orders that came through the last 2 days. And you know, it's sort of been a dizzying pace. But in terms of the pardons themselves, I do think we need to be careful about using them at such high volume once parties take power.
In terms of the orders that have come out, the one that's getting, I think, the most notoriety has to do with ending the birthright citizenship. So I'm curious what you made of that order and the legal challenges that have now been presented because of that executive order.
Well, you know, candidly, Chris, I think that the order needs to be made. There's obviously gross incentives that bring people to the country, that take advantage of the country. I mean, the cost of illegal immigration on this country is really untold, but I've gotten numbers that show just direct payment from state and federal government exceeds $150 billion a year. That's health care, that's education, that's transportation, you know, the full litany of benefits. And when you look at the 14th Amendment, when it was drafted, it was to basically usher in folks after the Civil War who had been marginalized, but who had been here for in some cases, generations. There was no other tie to a country or to another nation that these folks in the United States that were granted citizenship. It was predominantly targeted to the slaves and the freed slaves that had been marginalized and couldn't vote and couldn't participate in the civic system. But the 14th Amendment, it was in no way intended, if someone wanted to come here specifically outside the law and then gain legal access through a child, which happens very often. By some estimates, illegal immigrants are responsible for up to 8% of our births. And once that child is here, they have access to all of the benefits, all of the entitlements, all of the programs that are designed for American citizens. And when you look at the toll that illegal immigration has taken on our country, that subject to the jurisdiction thereof portion of the 14th Amendment, in my interpretation, that does not include those who come here outside of the law. But there will obviously be a very rigorous debate on this. I believe lawsuits have already been filed. North Carolina, in my personal opinion, unfortunately joined a lawsuit against this executive order. So I don't see any other conclusion besides going to the Supreme Court.
Congressman, a couple of thoughts before I let you go. President Trump mentioned earlier this week how he's coming to Western North Carolina on Friday to see some of the devastation that lingers with Hurricane Helene. Is there anything Congress can do to help the folks of Western North Carolina?
You know, all of the congressional delegation I know we get frequent updates from both the citizens and FEMA. And when we can bridge communication gaps and extend nights in hotels for people who are without homes, we've been doing that very vigorously. In terms of the broad decision-making capacity, that's with the president now. Mm-hmm. And we will obviously work with him to try to clear bureaucratic hurdles to secure more funding if they need it. But in terms of the broad administration, that's with the White House. But we are in frequent contact with both FEMA and folks on the ground, and we're trying to assist the best we can.
North Carolina 13th District Congressman Brad Knott. Congressman, thanks always for the time and the candor. We look forward to visiting again very soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
You too.